Hey, Cam, mind sending me over our new Wi-Fi password?
Oh, sorry, Mitch, you can't be trusted.
What?
It's your phone. It's different than mine.
Cam! And I thought I was a judgy one.
No, it's just messages between different devices aren't encrypted.
Okay. Since when do you know about encryption?
I know what encryption is, and it's because I'm the last line of defense against any would-be Wi-Fi thieves.
Cam, come on.
Okay, fine. I'll send it somewhere more private.
Thank you.
Safely send messages between different devices. On WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 41 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orrico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter, at JoeOrrico99. That's where I post all of my newest work, whether it be these podcasts, any articles that I write, updates to my Patreon. You guys can keep up with all of that by giving me a follow over at JoeOrrico99. I want to wish a very happy 4th of July to all of my American listeners out there. I hope you guys are enjoying the day off, spending it with family, friends, kicking up watching baseball, having a couple beers, barbecuing, whatever it is you guys are doing to enjoy the day. I hope you thoroughly enjoy the day off, and I know a lot of you probably took tomorrow off as well. Give yourself that nice extended long weekend. So happy holiday. I hope you guys are enjoying the day off. Today we are going to be breaking down Wednesday's slate, talking about the big things that stood out to me. And then later on in the show, we are, of course, going to be touching on the most added and drop players looking at Yahoo. But like I mentioned, we are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. It is the fastest growing place to play fantasy sports in the industry, and it's very easy to see why. I know most people already have an Underdog account, but if you are somebody who has not signed up yet, you can use my code Joe99. There's a link in the description of the episode. Makes it very easy to find. You go to the site, you put in that code Joe99, and then you get access to a special pick as well as a deposit bonus for your first time deposit. So make sure you guys are checking out Underdog. There's a lot of fun stuff over there, and it is a great place to play fantasy sports. But let's start breaking down the action. We are going to start with Mr. Gavin Williams, who made his season debut yesterday. Did not go necessarily according to plan for those who streamed him, for Gavin Williams, for anybody in the situation here, except maybe the White Sox to some extent. 4 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned runs, 2 strikeouts, and 2 walks with a 24% CSW and a 9.5% swinging strike rate. He threw 74 pitches and 62% of them were strikes, which is fine. His fastball was averaging 96.8, which is also very good. I was up a little bit from where he was last year, and then he was getting up as high as 98.9. Those are all fairly positive signs. I don't want to read too much into it was a bad result. It's not great. You don't want to see this kind of thing against a team like the White Sox, but it's not so much the result that really worries me, especially when you're seeing, you know, solid velocity from him. I think Williams is a potential front of the rotation guy for years to come, but I'm also very worried about how the elbow will hold up. And I was also just going through some old articles and old reporting last night and this morning, and they weren't super specific about Williams. They said it was like soreness, but they didn't really give you like an actual injury diagnosis, which maybe that's good, maybe it's not good. Personally, I just feel kind of odd about really investing much into these pitchers who do have an elbow problem, who choose to avoid surgery and try and go the rest route. They get injections or whatever it is that they do to stay off the operating table. It generally doesn't work for so long. The most recent examples we have this year, Tristan McKenzie, Kyle Bradish, things have not gone terribly well for them, and it's very hard to predict what you're going to see. McKenzie has been dreadful. Now, he hasn't actually had any type of procedure, but it feels like it's coming. He was awful, got sent down to the minors, and you know, you could really tell something was wrong. And then in Kyle Bradish's situation, he came back and looked excellent before ending up needing the Tommy John surgery. So it's very hard to know what's exactly going to happen, when it's going to happen. But I don't feel overly confident that Williams is going to just be able to go the rest of his career now and his elbow is just fine. I do think that at some point he is going to need to undergo, whether it's Tommy John or the brace procedure, the internal brace. There's so many different things they do now in the elbow outside of just Tommy John. So not necessarily it would be that. And again, I'm not omniscient. I have no idea what's going to happen here. But the recent track record does make you kind of worried. You see the first start where he's not hitting the ground running, and it does make you think, well, is Gavin Williams fully healthy? I hope so. I don't know that that's really possible considering the underlying problems. And again, they weren't overly specific. They didn't say this ligament is injured, this muscle, whatever. Like, it was just soreness and rest, and they weren't overly, unless I missed something in the reporting, and I looked through a bunch of different articles that went back to spring training and then throughout the first few months of the season, I didn't see a hell of a lot that said this specific thing is injured, which with McKenzie, it's like, you know, the UCL is damaged. You know that that's a serious problem. With Williams, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'm not sure, but I know that overall, I'm not very comfortable with him. I think that he is worth an ad if you're still seeing him out there in most leagues, maybe not in the very shallow leagues. But like we said with Bradish, there's a chance that Williams is able to give you 8, 10, 12, 15 really good starts. I just feel like at some point, whether it's later on this year, in the offseason, beginning of next year, he will eventually need to undergo some type of procedure. They just kick the can down the road a lot of the time with these players, and I understand it. You don't want to necessarily just say, I'm going to miss 18 months or 16 months of my career. That could be like close to two full seasons, depending on the timeline. But it also doesn't feel terribly smart to just push off these surgeries all the time and then end up with kind of bad results like we've seen with Bradish and McKenzie. And the one that scarred us a couple of years ago was Jacob DeGrom. Jacob DeGrom, he was a first, second round pick a couple of years ago. He threw, I don't know, 40 innings. It was 6-7 starts. And then he ended up needing to undergo the procedure. They try and put it off. And then eventually the surgeons come calling. So I'm really hoping that that doesn't happen with Williams, but I'm not overly optimistic that he will be able to just pitch and be fine now. Let's move on, though. Let's talk about Jarred Jones. Really strong start for him yesterday against St. Louis. And then we got a bit of disappointing news. Right after I finished my write-up yesterday on him, I saw that there was that day-to-day signal beside him, the day-to-day marker beside him on the Yahoo app. And I was wondering what was going on. There wasn't anything that I saw immediately after he was pulled. Because it was kind of weird. It was 5 innings. He was doing well, but they announced afterwards that it was due to a lat strain. And then we got the update this morning that Jarred Jones was placed on the 15-day injured list. He was really solid yesterday. 5 innings, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks, 33% CSW and a 12.8% swinging strike rate. I'm not overly concerned. And from what I'm seeing here, just reading the Roto World blurb, the team doesn't seem to be overly concerned either. But the fact that they put him on the IL pretty quickly, they didn't give it a couple days to see what's up, does worry you a little bit. I think you're probably going to get him back. Maybe he comes back before the All-Star break, but probably, you know, they give him the All-Star break to rest, then he comes back, and he should be fine, assuming this doesn't spiral out of control. I don't expect it to, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on and not what you want to see if you are a Jones manager. He has been overshadowed by Paul Skeens because Paul Skeens has just been out of this world, but Jarred Jones, overall, he's a 3.56 ERA, 1.11 whip, 98 strikeouts, and 28 walks in 91 innings pitched. Now, when I wrote this last night, I said, I don't think that Jones is somebody that I worry about as much as some of the other shutdown risks that we have talked about. He's thrown about 125 innings in each of the last 2 years, and I think the Pirates are just kind of unpredictable because we know like they kept Jones down longer than they should have. They do some odd things to preserve innings sometimes. So they'll probably do something, and, you know, I don't want to speculate too much. Is this lat strain? I'm putting on the tinfoil hat here, but, like, is this kind of like the phantom IL stint that we see from Jones to keep the innings down? I don't think so. I think that's probably being a little too conspiracy theorist of me. But, you know, they're going to do things that are going to probably limit him to some extent. But that being said, I think it's very plausible to see him still hit, like, the 140, 150 inning mark. He's going to come back, hopefully, without any problems at the end of July, and then we'll see another 8 to 10 starts. It's something along those lines. So I don't feel the same level of concern with him as I do with Skeens, as I do with Luis Gil, with Reynaldo Lopez, with Garrett Crochet. I think with Jones, it's a little bit different, but now this lat strain does complicate things. Let's hope it's not serious. There's nothing we can really do except hope it's not serious. You're obviously not dropping him. You're not really trying to trade him. If you were trying to trade him, today wouldn't be a great day to do it, considering he went on the IL anyway. But I would be fine holding out Jarred Jones here. Let's keep an eye on the situation. Let's see what the updates are. Hopefully it's a minimum stay. And then we get back and he keeps doing the great things that we have seen him doing this season. Hasn't been quite as good as the first few starts, but overall, like I said, 3.56 ERA, 1.11 whip. He's been fantastic. It's hard to really complain at all, especially because Jared Jones was somebody you picked up off the waiver wire or drafted incredibly late. So you've gotten quite a bit already. And that was a conversation I heard somebody talking about the other day with like Garrett Crochet, Jack Flaherty. We're always trying to like get little bits of value out of them here and there. And I do think that that is what you should do. You should be trying to extract value wherever you can. I talked about this on yesterday's show, or maybe it was the day before. I always lose track of when I said something. But if you can sell at a peak of value, it's generally a good idea to do so. But at the same time, you also have to remember, if you don't get a third round, first round, second round player back for Garrett Crochet or something, it's not the end of the world because you took him at with your last pick or with your last couple of picks, or you picked him up off the wire. So yes, definitely extracting value is key, but it's also key to remember what you paid for these guys. The sunk cost thing shouldn't be at the top of your mind, but it's definitely something there. Like if you paid a fifth round price for somebody, you're going to look at it a lot differently than you will about the Joneses and the Flahertys of the world that you paid like essentially nothing for. So there's something else to keep in mind when you are trying to extract value. Let's move on and let's talk about Carlos Rodon. This guy, I don't even know what to make of him. I really don't. And he's been the most frustrating, hard player to analyze the entire season, without a doubt. 5 1/3 yesterday, 3 earned runs, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks, and a 33% CSW. He had an incredible 15.8% swinging strike rate. At this point, just expect the unexpected with Rodon. There's nothing I can really say that I haven't said already about him. You're going to get blow-ups mixed in with really good starts, and it's going to be impossible to know when they're going to come. Just looking at his game log, there are stretches where he's been absolutely brilliant, stretches where he's been awful, the odd random blow-up. Sometimes it's 2 strikeouts. He's had games with 9, 8, 7. Then sometimes there's 3 or 4. There is no pattern here. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no predictability. But if you look at the season as a whole for Rodon, it hasn't been that bad. The ERA at 4.45 is not what you want to see, but a lot of that is influenced by a couple of those blow-up starts recently. For the most part this season, Rodon's made 18 starts. For most of them, you've been very confidently starting him, and he's been very good. And I think that going forward, he'll probably be very serviceable. I don't have really many concerns. I mean, it's hard to say, honestly. I am a little bit concerned. But overall, I think that he's solid enough where he can be a serviceable guy. It's just you're not expecting Cy Young caliber Rodon to walk through the door. You're getting a guy who is middle of the pack, middle to late of the pack type of SP on your 12-teamers. If you're in a really shallow league, probably not somebody that you need to be holding super tight in those really shallow 10-teamers. But anything 12 and beyond, I think he's still very good. I think he'll be fine going forward. But again, we don't know because Rodon throughout this season has been infuriatingly hard to evaluate, truly. Starting in the preseason with the velo bump and then the velo drop. And then, I mean, it's been very hard start to start to know what exactly you're going to get out of Carlos Rodon. But I think he's going to be serviceable. Just he's not that ace-level pitcher anymore. You look at the strikeouts, they're not what they used to be. The walks are okay, but he's allowing more home runs than he used to. I mean, last year, it's hard to even include last year with how bad and the injuries, but 2.10 homer per 9 last year, which was crazy high. You weren't going to see that stick, but it's 1.64 this year when he was really dominating in 2021 and 2022. He did not give up really any home runs, and it also came with massive, massive upside in terms of strikeouts, 33, 34%. You can't lose 10% off your strikeout rate and then start giving up a lot more home runs and then expect to really have much success. I don't think in terms of, like, he's an ace-level pitcher. Can he be a middling type of guy? Like, it's still a 23%, 24% strikeout rate, which is okay. It's just he's not the ace that you were hoping he would turn back into this season. And we kind of have to grasp that with him, and we've talked about this with Kevin Gausman. Sometimes these guys reach these peaks for a couple years and they come back down to earth. It's very, very tough to get back up to being the best pitcher or one of the top 3 or 5 pitchers in the world once you do kind of hit that wall. And you're seeing Rodon get a lot older. I mean, he's going to be 32 later on this year. When he was hitting those heights, he was 28, 29. You start to see guys slow down. But all that being said, I think he's serviceable. I think that he is a fine, serviceable starting pitcher in 12-teamers where you don't really need to feel too extreme about him one way or the other. Sit him in the tougher matchups. You start him for the mediocre to easier matchups, and that's about it. But Rodon is, without a doubt this season, the most unpredictable player. He could face the Athletics and give up 11 earned runs, and the next start give you a complete game shutout against the Dodgers, and I would not be surprised. It's just all over the place with Rodon, but the bottom line is I think he'll be serviceable.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's talk about Mitchell Parker. Did not have his finest day against the Mets. It was the first time he'd given up more than four earned runs in any start in his career, which is very impressive. But he was better than the box score indicates. Six innings, five hits, five earned runs, five strikeouts, no walks with a 31% CSW, and the massive 16.7% swinging strike rate. All of the damage was done on three home runs, and you can't ignore three home runs, but otherwise he was very, very sharp. The splitter was brilliant for him yesterday. It was increased RPM on it by about 300. It was up 2.1 miles an hour, 50% whiff rate. It really, really was working for him yesterday. It's unfortunate that he did give up the couple of home runs, but overall Mitchell Parker has been really good. And I think he's serviceable arm in 12-teamers. I think you can roster him and start him. We're going to talk about another pitcher. Later on today, we'll mention him, but we'll talk about him a lot tomorrow, Jake Irvin. And it's just like an organizational thing, it feels like, at this point. Washington has turned around their pitching development. A guy like Irvin having a great year out of the blue. Trevor Williams was great. DJ Hertz has come up and had some really excellent starts here and there. And then Mitchell Parker has been just really, really excellent. Not even mentioning the Mackenzie Gore growth we've seen. Washington's turning into a bit of a pitching factory. It's something we need to keep an eye on. I think Mitchell Parker is a very, very serviceable guy in 12-teamers. I also understand if people want to treat him as more of a streamer than a must-roster guy without the great team context, without the massive strikeout upside in the big leagues just yet. I understand if you do want to view him as more of a start him when there is a good matchup type of player. But overall, I think you're getting really, really good production out of Mitchell Parker with a very high floor. We have seen most of his outings, five, six innings, two or three runs with four or five strikeouts. And it doesn't sound that crazy, but when you're getting that every time out, it's like what I mentioned with Simeon Woods-Richardson the other day. It's not going to blow you away. You're not going to be getting these complete game shutouts or 12 strikeout games or things of that nature, but you're getting a very high floor. And especially for those like myself who play in a lot of deeper leagues, a lot of deep 12s and 15-teamers, there's a ton of value there. When I say he's more of a streamer for some of you, that's probably, like I mentioned, those ESPN standard size rosters where you're cutting guys who have just great stats because there's no room for them. The ESPN standard roster size is tiny. They shrunk it down to, I don't play there anymore myself, but I think it's down to like, what is it, 12 starters overall, 12 or 13 or something. It's not conducive to adding a lot of players. So in those type of situations, yeah, Mitchell Parker is a little bit trickier, but for most of you, I think that he is very, very serviceable arm who hasn't really gotten his due. If you're just looking at roster rates across the various sites, he's 34% on Yahoo. 3.61 ERA, 1.10 WHIP. He's won five games. Strikeouts are not amazing. And like I said, the team context obviously isn't great, but he's a lot better than that 34% gives him credit for. Let's talk about Mark Vientos. I've been really impressed by what we've seen from him and what is still a very small sample size, 145 at-bats, but he's slashing 297, 352, and 579 on the slug. 579 slug is outrageous. 26 runs. He hit his 11th home run of the season yesterday to go along with 29 RBI. He has been excellent, and he's first and third base eligible in a lineup that's getting really hot, and yet he's still just 63% on Yahoo. It's jumped up 20% over the last week, but it's still not high enough as far as I see it. That power is incredibly legit. He might get close to that 30 home run mark. It's maybe going to be in the 25, 26, 27 range, but if he stays hot, he might just get to 30 home runs over like 110 games or something crazy. It sounds unbelievable, but if you just look at the basic projections rest of season, they're calling for anywhere from 10 to 12 additional home runs, so that gets you already into the 24 range, and projections by nature are more conservative. They're projecting like a 50th percentile outcome. When you're looking at that 14.7% barrel rate and the way he has been heating up, it's not crazy to think Vientos could get to that high 20 number. I think he's going to be in that neighborhood somewhere, and the fact that he is hitting for average, he's getting on base quite a bit. That strikeout rate, which had been problematic in his previous cups of coffee at the big league level, it was 29.3% and then 30.5% in 22 and 23. This year, he's brought it all the way down to 23.3%. I love Mark Vientos. I love him as a prospect. I think that that power is an excellent, excellent asset, especially in a year where power is very hard to come by. I think that he is somebody that you got to consider to be a must-roster player in all but the shallowest of formats. And even there, it's hard to find a reason not to pick him up. He's doing a lot for you. In those 41 games he's played, it's 55 runs and RBIs combined. It's just incredible stuff for Mark Vientos. If you're still seeing him out there on waiver wires, I would correct that very, very quickly. Let's talk about James Wood. Now, he has moved around a little bit in the order throughout his first few games, but I think it's worth noting that yesterday he did bat third against a right-handed pitcher. First two games were against a lefty. He batted sixth. Yesterday he moved up and batted third. And then today, against another left-handed pitcher that the Nationals are facing today, was Jose Quintana. He moved down to fifth, but it's still like he's going to be in that top to middle part of the order. I think we're going to see against righties and against everybody, really, he's going to slot into that 3-5 type of range. Through his first four games now, because the game today did happen, they played at 11 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. It was a very early game, but he does have four hits through his first four games. Yesterday, he scored a run, drove in another, and also stole a base. If you're still seeing James Wood out there anywhere, it's unlikely you are in most cases. He's up to 67% now on Yahoo. But if you're still seeing him out there anywhere, I would get him very, very quickly onto your team. This is probably about your last chance, unless you're talking about really shallow leagues or less competitive formats where you may have an extra day or two. I would be picking up James Wood while you still can. He looks like a generational talent. Like, just if you look at the stat lines that he's put up in the minor leagues, you look at him physically, the athleticism, the power, the speed, the fact that he's drastically cut his strikeout rate, raised his walk rate. It's really, like, I don't know that I'm going to say he's like a top I don't even know for Dynasty, because I'm not a huge Dynasty person. I plan on getting more into it in the offseason. But we're probably talking about, at worst, like a top 25 or 30 Dynasty asset, I would say. If you're looking at prospect lists, you might see him at number one right now, depending on how people feel about Holiday and Caminero. I don't think Langford was going to qualify for prospect list anymore, but that's the conversation that James Wood is in. He's a generational type of offensive talent, and I think it's very safe to say the Nats did well in that trade for Juan Soto. They really, really did about as well as any trade I can remember in my lifetime of trading a superstar player who is not even in his prime yet. I think Soto, when they traded him, was 23, or maybe he had turned 24. but you're I think he was 23. It's like a no-win scenario. I think they probably should have just re-signed him. But the package that the Nationals were able to get back, just ridiculous. When Wood is probably the headliner, but then you could argue Mackenzie Gore, and then you got C.J. Abrams, who's been excellent. It's a king's ransom. It truly is. But James Wood needs to be picked up wherever, whenever, right now. Like, there's no question about it. If you are talking shallow points leagues, you're talking deep head-to-head, roto, whatever your format is, if it's another one that I haven't even heard of, pick up James Wood. And honestly, you probably can't even in most cases, 67%, we're pushing it. But I think if you are talking still some 10 and 12 team leagues, you might see him out there. Looking at my waiver wires yesterday, I usually do Fab Saturday and Sunday. Typically, I condense it to Sunday because I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to do a bunch of bidding and put in a bunch of stuff on Friday, Saturday, and then see that there's injuries or guys getting moved around, and then I end up having to go back and redo it. So I tend to do it mostly on Sunday. For the first time this year, I started putting in Fab bids last night because James Wood is still available in some of those 15-team leagues. And even in one of my 12-teamers, the way it works on the NFBC is until a player debuts, they're not in the player pool unless they were drafted. In leagues where James Wood was drafted, maybe people held on, but I think in a lot of cases he was either not drafted, held and dropped, whatever. So he's in the player pool in some leagues, or actually I guess at this point he's in the player pool in all leagues, but he hadn't been available until he debuted. Once he debuted on Monday, that's when he gets added into the Fab pool for the following weekend. And I was just so excited about the potential for James Wood. I don't know if I'm actually going to get him because I've spent a decent chunk of Fab this year on a number of players. The Christian Scotts of the world. I picked up Mike Trout in one league where he was dropped. I think my best pickup of the year might be Stephen Kwan in TGFBI, but it did cost me quite a bit. It was like 100 and some odd. So I don't have a ton of Fab left, but I do really, really want to get me some James Wood, and I was so excited that I started doing Fab a few days early, which is not something I tend to do, but just give you an idea of how excited I am for James Wood. And if you just listen to anybody in the fantasy world, in the baseball world in general, talk about James Wood, everybody is very, very excited. So no hyperbole. He is a potential generational talent, and I think we've already seen him kind of hit the ground running here. If you can get him on your squad, I would do anything you can to make that happen. Let's talk about his teammate, Luis Garcia. Of course, I need to specify that it is the Luis Garcia on the Nationals because there are, across Major League Baseball, at least a couple of them anyway. I think there was a time when there might have been three. Yeah, just looking at the Yahoo player pool, there's three Luis Garcias, so it's always good to specify. He hit two home runs yesterday. Great stuff out of him. I saw somebody actually on Twitter had put a bet down on Luis Garcia hitting two home runs in yesterday's game. I don't know what their system is, but goddamn, like that projection system that led you to place that bet must be doing some pretty damn good things for you. But Luis Garcia has also been doing some pretty damn good things for you as a whole. On base percentage, we're not going to talk about that so much because it's .294. It's not very good. When you start to look at the rest of his line, though, .261 batting average, 28 runs, 9 homers, 40 ribbies, and 11 stolen bases. He's on pace for close to a 2020 season with maybe 60-some-odd runs and close to 80 RBI. Considering how terrible second base is, that's a fairly common refrain on this show. Second base sucks unless you have an Altuve, unless you're running out a Stott, a Ketel Marte type. A lot of people are churning and burning second baseman because there's just not a hell of a lot there once you're getting past name 8, name 9, name 10 on the list of rankings or ADP or whatever. Second base is never typically that deep, but this year it feels particularly weaker. A guy like Garcia, who is producing quite well for you, you know, he is pacing very well, and if you look at the projections, because those are two different things, what a guy is pacing at this point of the season versus what he's projected for, even the projections are very strong and they would, you know, indicate that you're probably going to see 16, 17 homers, 16, 17 stolen bases, a .260 to .270 batting average, decent counting stats, and he's playing every day. So I think that there are pretty much every day anyway. I think that Luis Garcia is a very, very solid asset, specifically for you guys who play in those slightly deeper leagues. If you are talking about, you know, 10 teamers, maybe it's tricky, but honestly, like, you could stream him in there and I wouldn't have any real problem with it. He's a pretty well-rounded fantasy asset who doesn't really hurt you anywhere. I'd like a few more runs out of him maybe, but he's not hurting you anywhere. He's been very solid. He's just 16% on Yahoo, and I think the more you stray towards the deeper formats.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The NL-only type leagues, if you're talking a 15-team NFBC league, I think he's probably rostered in most NL-only leagues. But in those 15-teamers, he is very valuable, and I don't think that his roster rates are reflecting what he's actually been producing. I know you shouldn't. We're not reading too much into a two-homer game because that's why we're talking about him here, but the product as a whole has been very, very solid. The fact that he has 40 ribbies and 11 steals, good batting average, he's hitting for a bit of power, like there's a lot to like here, especially considering how weak second base is. But let's talk about Noelvi Marte. It's been a little bit up and down since his return, but he smacked his first home run of the season yesterday against Carlos Rodon. It's a home run and two stolen bases in six games since his return with five runs and four ribbies. Even though it's been a little bit shaky as a whole, that's pretty damn good for six games. Homer, two steals, four runs batted in, and five runs. That's really good stuff. Now, my main reservation about Noelvi Marte are the PEDs. What impact did they have? Was this something he'd been taking for longer than we realized? Is it something that bulked him up? Because this wasn't like, oh, it was a cream that I had on my arm. Like, he tested positive for, like, anabolic steroid type of stuff. Like, this was not like, oh, whoopsie daisy, I didn't know. Like, it does really look like he cheated on purpose. But at the same time, I think you've got to pick him up where he's available, considering the upside in that ballpark. And third base, you know, we talk about how bad second base is. Third base isn't much better. Third base could actually be considered worse, depending on who you drafted and who you're asking. Third base stinks, but Great American Ballpark in the summer months where the top prospect power-speed combination there, I think you should be picking him up where you can find him still. And then we hope that there wasn't much of an impact from the PEDs and that it was just kind of a slip-up, maybe that he was nervous about how he would look in the major leagues or something, I don't know. But overall, I think that even though I am a little bit worried about what impact they may have had, he still needs to be rostered. If you're still seeing him out there, and a lot of you are, he's only on 47% of Yahoo rosters, I would be doing what you can to pick him up because I don't see that staying that low for very long. Let's move on and let's talk about the top ads and drops of the day, looking, of course, at Yahoo. And number one is Brooks Lee. I did a long write-up on Patreon about Brooks Lee. If you guys want to check that out, there is a link in the description of the episode for my Patreon. He had two hits in his debut yesterday. That was really good. And the thing that I was interested about, because with Brooks Lee, I wasn't sure if they were going to call him up and they were going to, because first of all, the way that prospects have been used this year, you never know when they get called up if they're going to play or not. but I also wasn't sure what his position was going to be necessarily. I thought there's a chance that Jose Miranda might play third. Lee takes over as kind of like a utility guy. There was part of me that thought maybe Lee plays short and maybe they put Correa at third, but that didn't last long in my head. What they ended up doing was putting Brooks Lee at third and Miranda was the DH. And that's a very good thing from a fantasy point of view because shortstop is not like second base and third base. Shortstop is very deep. That's why you see guys like Mason Winn is the main guy that I've been really banging the drum on this season. The roster rates haven't really moved, and I've had to come to accept the fact that that's because shortstop is very deep, and most people have a shortstop already. It's not anything against Mason Winn. They just don't have room for him. But when you're seeing a guy like Mason Winn batting 300, who's kind of contributing all over the place, who's on most waiver wires, it makes you wonder, what the hell can Brooks Lee do that's really going to make him an asset that people are going to want to add in those shallow formats? Well, the thing that he can do is get third base eligibility, and a couple more starts at third base, and that is going to be a reality for you guys who play on Yahoo. It's a five-game threshold on Yahoo. Four more starts, and we are going to see him get that eligibility. And the game today, because of the early slate, has started already, and Brooks Lee, once again, did slot in at third base. So it's actually down to just three more after today, and then he'll be third and shortstop eligible. And that combination is many moons more valuable than just having shortstop. So I think that he is tentatively worth an add. If you're looking at the player as a whole, I don't know that it's like the sexiest fantasy game, to be honest with you. There's not a ton of speed. There's decent power. He could probably hit for a decent batting average. I think that he is like a 12-plus team type of guy. If you're talking really shallow 10-teamers, is he going to cut it? Probably not. It could end up being like a really nice breakout for him. I think the way that prospects have come up, they've kind of scarred us into thinking that everybody's going to struggle a little bit. But if Brooks Lee comes up, you know, he's shown decent power, you know, not much speed, but he maybe steals a couple bases. It could work out for you. I just think that if you're talking like really shallow leagues, it is going to be tricky. It's more like a 12-plus team league type of deal. And even in those standard-sized 12-teamers, I guess it really does depend on your roster construction, who you already got going, because you might be in a position where you got third and short locked up and you don't want to put him in the utility spot, and rightfully so. I don't think he is worthy of a utility spot. So it is a little bit case by case. I don't think Brooks Lee is anywhere close to that James Wood or Noelvi Marte line of you got to pick him up now. But there's a chance it works out very well for you. The thing that you can look at here, if you want to give it a couple days, is that he's not really going to move mountains on Yahoo. He's at 21% rostered. We saw James Wood gain 20% like in the time I was recording the show the day he was called up. I'm exaggerating, but just ever so slightly. You're not seeing that with Brooks Lee unless we see the guy hit like home runs over the next week, a couple home runs every day or something. Like, he's not going to jump up so much, especially before he has that third base eligibility. So I think that there is some value here, but I'm keeping my expectations in check, especially for shallow league managers. If you are playing 15-team leagues and you're getting a new third base top prospect popping up into the player pool, that's obviously very valuable. But I think a lot of you in your 12-teamers and your 10-teamers, maybe you take a shot, but it's really not a situation where I think you're missing out big time if you don't get Brooks Lee. In those shallow formats, and even in the deeper formats, honestly, there are probably some better options out there, and you got to prioritize Wood and Marte. If you're somebody who picked up Brooks Lee, unless it's just truly a positional thing, but I mean, Marte's third base, right? I don't think that if you are looking for a third baseman, you'd go for Lee unless Marte's already taken, unless you're really worried about the PED stuff, but I think you got to prioritize them, Wood, Marte, and then Lee. And I think there's a pretty big gap between Marte and Lee, but there's still a chance that Brooks Lee ends up being a very valuable asset this season. I think it's just more so suited for slightly deeper formats. Let's talk about Landon Knack. He has been very, very good so far. 30 and a third innings pitched, 2.08 ERA and a 0.96 whip. He's getting Arizona tonight, and Arizona's been a decent enough offense that it's not like a bird matchup, but I think based on how he's done tonight or how he's done as of late, you got to pick him up. I think Landon Knack is somebody, if you are talking 15-team leagues, I was looking yesterday because I said I was starting to think about Fab yesterday. He's still available in some 12s and some 15-team leagues. I think the Dodgers are going to use him. The Dodgers starting pitching situation is not amazing, between Paxton with Bueller, you always got the potential with Glass now for something. I wonder if they're going to want to limit Gavin Stone at all. I don't know if Clayton Kershaw even factors into the equation at this point. So I think they're going to need Knack more than people are expecting. He's done great things. There's going to be a lot of win opportunities. Hasn't really come to fruition so far. And this is why we talk about how random wins are, right? Landon Knack in his, what is it, six starts now for the Dodgers has one win, despite having a 2.08 ERA. It's so, so hard to predict. If you just said somebody's thrown six starts for the Dodgers, 2.08 ERA, you'd probably say, all right, he's probably won four of them, three of them. So that is a part that just a reminder of how hard it is to predict any of these things. But I think at the same time, Landon Knack has a lot going for him, and he's well worth a shot in all 12-plus team leagues. Ben Lively was among the popular ads of the day. He got three checks in my starting pitcher chart last night. An easy start considering how well he's done this year against a team like the White Sox. He's through five innings of one-run ball right now with five strikeouts, so that one is looking pretty, pretty good. Nathaniel Lowe is being added up still. We talked about him a little bit on the show. I think that he's fine in the slightly deeper formats, or if you're just looking to plug him in as a utility guy or as a streamer, but if you're looking for an everyday first baseman, I don't think Nathaniel Lowe is really going to cut it, honestly. I think he is more of a deeper league guy, and a lot of that does come down to first base being so deep, but also the power numbers below the surface aren't that great for him. And you can see it, right? Like, he had two home runs entering this week, and he's gone on a little bit of a heater this week, but I don't think that's going to change how I feel about him as a whole. If you're in a 10 or a 12-team league, I don't think that Nathaniel Lowe really deserves a spot unless you're just talking strictly as a streamer. Alec Marsh is being picked up quite a bit. He's starting tonight against Tampa. I've really liked what we've seen from him. I know that there has been some up and down, but against a team like Tampa, I think Alec Marsh is a very solid option. Starting pitcher and relief pitcher eligible does make it a little bit easier to fit him into the lineup there. I think Alec Marsh is a very, very solid option for tonight. Shane Baz is also being added up in quite a few leagues. He's starting tomorrow. He will start tomorrow against the Rangers. This one is... I don't even know how to feel about Shane Baz, to be perfectly honest with you. I think the talent is really good, but at the same time, he struggled in his first go-around at the big leagues to some extent. The surface stats were not all that great. If you look at what he's done through 40 innings, it's a 4.02 ERA, which I don't want to read too much into that, but it hasn't just been like clear skies for him. And now you're talking about a situation where Tampa's going to baby him. They're a weird team to begin with. It might be very short, abbreviated outings. So, like, yeah, he's a pickup. The talent is through the roof. The potential is through the roof. But I'm also not looking at this as a surefire thing. It might work out. Shane Baz might be back on waiver wires in a few weeks. But for now, the upside, I think you do pick him up there. It's a tricky assignment in his first start of the year against the Rangers. I think in most situations you are adding him up, though. A couple other players that are being added are guys we've talked about a lot recently, so I won't spend a lot of time on them, but Ryan O'Hearn hit a home run yesterday, drove in three. I'm a broken record about O'Hearn. I won't go on and on and on about him again. Jose Miranda had a hit yesterday, and today in the game that is ongoing, he's 3-for-3, scored three times with a couple of ribbies. Make sure you're getting him while you still can, because it's not going to last for long, and like we mentioned, third base is a little bit tricky to fill this year. Vientos, Brenton Doyle are also being added. This one, the one that really gets me, is Ronzi Contreras. It's too much of a risk, even against a team like Oakland. I think the skills are pretty, pretty bad for Ronzi Contreras. I'm not sure how long he's even going to go. It's been three innings, one inning, three innings in his last three outings. So I think he's more of an opener type. I get that the Oakland matchup is appealing. And if you just look at the ERA, well, it's 3.82. That's not bad. Ronzi Contreras is pretty dreadful. Going from one bad organization to a dreadful organization is definitely not going to help his development. And I just don't really see a reason to want to stream him tonight. It doesn't sound like a lot, but more than 2,000 ads is a good chunk. And that's actually like 2% on Yahoo. He has jumped up because of it. I think you are really playing with fire if you are picking up Ronzi Contreras and using him for any outing, even against Oakland. I think it's a little bit of a risk. Let's talk about Davis Daniel. He had not a great second outing yesterday, took the loss against the Athletics, four runs on seven hits with one walk. I think he's a guy you send back to the waiver wire. There was a lot of interest after that Detroit outing. He went eight shutout innings, struck out eight batters, got the victory. But we talked about on the show yesterday how often you see a repeat performance of something like that. Even when the matchup is good, it's not like, well, he did well in his first start, so he'll do well in his second start. Usually these guys do have some struggles. It's kind of anecdotal. Sometimes these guys do very well. Sometimes they're just bad, bad, bad. It's all random, really. But I feel like a lot of the time when a guy has a good first start out of the blue, you're not expecting it. Everybody adds him up after that, and then the second start, you kind of get that whipsaw thing that Jeff Erickson talks about. You're starting him for the bad one, you're sitting him for the good one. So I don't think that the talent level is there for him to be like a must-roster, must-start type of player. He's going to face the Rangers next week. I don't think I'd be comfortable starting him there outside of some pretty deep formats. Let's talk about a sad one here with Jordan Romano. He is going to, or actually underwent surgery yesterday to repair an impingement in his right elbow. He was already a drop. We talked about this a week or so ago. I didn't expect much from him going forward. I didn't think the elbow would be able to remain intact. Or maybe not just intact is maybe not the right word, but I didn't think he'd be able to stay healthy going forward. And they're saying he's shut down completely for 6 weeks, and then he'll be able to resume throwing. That might mean we don't see Jordan Romano on the mound again in 2024. There's a chance 6 weeks from right now is the middle of August. That's when he's going to start throwing again. It's crazy to say, by the way, that 6 weeks from now it's going to be the middle of August. But season's flying by. We're 52, 53% of the way there. Romano comes back in the middle of August, or not even comes back, starts throwing the ball again. You got to hope for no setbacks. You got to hope everything goes according to plan, that he comes back, and that he is able to, after dealing with an elbow problem and then surgery, while he also has a back problem underlying in the background there, that he's able to come back and just be great when he was awful to start the season. So there's really a very slim chance of getting any type of value from Romano. Is there a world where he's healthy in September and is able to save 7 or 8 games from you? It's definitely possible. And if you have an IL space, sure, I don't mind holding on. Whenever you have free IL space, I don't mind holding on to anybody unless they're, you know, you're taking up active space on the bench because of it. Like, if you have those designated IL spots, I don't have a problem with holding on to him, but I don't think you're holding out for much. I think maybe you get a few saves in September, and if you're looking at your team and you're saying, you know what, I need to kind of hold out hope for the potential there, it's not worth burning an active roster spot. But on the IL, it would be fine. I think the Blue Jays pen is probably the worst in all of baseball. I think there's a very good argument to be made that the Blue Jays have the, you know, between the 28th, 29th, 30th best pen in all of the league. I think that the option right now is probably Chad Green. I think that's who they're probably going to turn to, but I don't really trust him so much. If it were me, I think that Nate Pearson should probably be given a chance here just to see what he's capable of doing, but I don't really expect that to happen either. I think it's probably going to be Chad Green when Yimmy Garcia comes back, assuming he's able to stay healthy because he's dealing with an elbow problem of his own. Maybe, you know, he probably gets a few opportunities, but I think that they're going to just start shipping guys out pretty soon. The Blue Jays are recognizing this is kind of a lost year. I hope they are anyway. Garcia has been great up to this point. If he comes back, gives you a couple saves, bolster some of that trade value at the deadline or heading into the deadline, I think the Blue Jays are going to seriously look into that. So I think that the answer is probably Chad Green, but the real answer probably is just stay away from this. There's really not much to gain from streaming in Blue Jays relievers and trying to hope that it's this guy this week or that guy or whatever. I think it's a situation where unless you're truly desperate, you just stay away from the Toronto bullpen altogether. Christian Scott is also being dropped quite a bit. Did not have a great return to the majors yesterday. 6 hits, couple walks, struck out 2 batters in 5 2/3 innings. He was not really fooling anybody. Those whiffs were very, very low. It was just not an impressive start. It really was just very, very mediocre stuff from Christian Scott. I'm not letting it bother me in terms of how I feel about him. I just worry that the Mets are going to send him down or do something because of it. They're going to read too much into it. The Mets are in a very bad position in terms of pitching. I saw a report yesterday that the Mets are in a position of depth in terms of their starting pitching, and they're willing to trade a few names. I don't know how confident you feel about this rotation that I think, as of right now, Jose Quintana might be the ace of. So I don't think that there's a lot of stability there, and I think Christian Scott does bring some of that stability with some of that upside as well. He was excellent in his first go-around. I think that you give him another start or two to kind of adjust back to the major leagues because he's been facing AAA batters now, doing really well against them. Give him a couple starts to adjust back. I think things will be very good for him. He's not somebody that I want to be dropping. I think if you are dropping him, it's got to be a really shallow league, or you got to have like a can't miss type of guy sitting out on your waiver wire. But I think dropping Christian Scott is probably a little bit extreme. David Festa was hit around quite a bit yesterday. 7 runs, 9 hits, no walks. He did strike out 5, and it wasn't as bad as the box score actually suggests with David Festa. He's another guy I wrote up in depth yesterday over on Patreon. 73% of his pitches were strikes. All of his pitches were generating whiffs. The home runs were unfortunate. It was 3 home runs. Something to watch going forward, as we've seen the home runs kind of rise as he's climbed up the minor league ranks. But I was very encouraged by what we saw yesterday, despite it being kind of a rough outing. And I think he's kind of a sneaky ad as he'll line up to face the White Sox next week. And I think that he'll do very well against the White Sox. I think that, you know, we've seen a couple of outings where he's getting his feet wet. You get a nice matchup there after showing some improvement against Detroit yesterday. I know it doesn't look like improvement if you just look at the box score, but I think David Festa is quite a bit better than what these numbers would suggest so far. The strikeout and whiff rates in the minors are excellent. Whenever you see a guy kind of stumble in his first couple big league starts with that kind of talent under the surface, it's usually a good buying opportunity. But I will leave it there, guys. That is it for the 4th of July show. Like I said at the beginning, I hope you guys are enjoying the day. I hope you guys are relaxing, spending some time at the pool with your families, whatever it is you're doing. But just enjoy the day. Make sure you guys are chilling out, watching some baseball, and hopefully you guys are having some success in your leagues today. It's been kind of an interesting couple weeks. My Tout Wars team has jumped up all the way to 4th, and then it fell down to 7th, and it's kind of bouncing around. I had a couple of teams, like I had one team that was in 1st place and it fell all the way to 8th. Thank you, Luis Gil. So it is kind of a tricky time of year when you're moving up and down the standings, especially if you are in the middle of a league, in a roto league. You can be 4th one day, 9th the next day, and then 3rd again the next day after that. So it is a fun time of year to be watching the standings. You got to start thinking about what categories you need. And there's a lot of fun stuff to think about, really, in general, this time of year in the baseball world with the trade deadline coming up, the All-Star game. We just announced the starters yesterday. So there's a lot of fun stuff. I hope you guys are enjoying everything. If you guys haven't already done so, leave a rating and review on the show. It really does help us to grow, help us to find more people here. And that is what we are trying to do as we continue to build up this feed. We're just about back all the way from where the old feed was in terms of downloads, in terms of listeners. We're pretty close, but you guys can help me get over that final hump by hitting me with a rating, review, all that great stuff. JoeRico99 is the Twitter if you guys want to keep up with my work on a daily basis, my quick hit notes, my podcast, my articles, ranking updates, all that at JoeRico99. But I will leave it there, guys. Hope you have a great holiday weekend. We will talk again tomorrow, but I'm assuming some of you guys are going to catch up on these later on next week as you are enjoying the day with your family. But whenever you listen, hope you're enjoying. We'll see you again tomorrow. But until then, take care and have a great night.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.